This is NPR Journal from National Public Radio. What have you heard about Boonville?
That there's a special language that's spoken here.
If you want to harp about something, that Kimmy over there, you talk about somebody. Thribs for Charlie Brown Bear Track.
Oh!
Just sat there and gone. I'd have been so tongue-cuppy, I couldn't have piked. Yeah, I know.
A 125 miles north of San Francisco, there's a peaceful narrow valley bordered by low rolling wooded hills. It's called the Anderson Valley, and 100 years ago it was a land of subsistence farming. The countryside was dotted with homesteads. There were barns and apple orchards, sheep and cattle, and a few small vineyards. Most everyone knew each other. They worked together shearing sheep, picking hops in nearby Bell Valley, and hunting in the Bald Hills. And at the end of the day, they relaxed together. And so it was in this valley, around the town of Boonville, that a lingo grew.
It started in the hop fields in Bell Valley. And of course, it did grow around the swimming holes and saloons and wherever men got together, or boys.
Boonling evolved as a private language, primarily among men. They could discuss anything they didn't want outsiders to understand, from what went on in the hop fields during the day to their favorite themes of women and drinking. In its heyday in around 1920, about 500 people spoke Boonling. Now around 200 speak it at all, and only 35 fluently, but still it remains as an unusual American artifact. And though there have been 100 years of growth and change in the valley since the lingo began, Boonters still sit around on a Saturday afternoon talking about politics and the outside world, just as the old-timers did.
You know, that's the trouble with the country. There's too many people harping for more Higgs all the time, and too many feather legs harping ball, we'll give you more Higgs. And that Kimmy Harp's neighbor, he says, you want more Higgs, you go someplace else.
Too slow on the draw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's no quick draw there.
Right.
Yeah.
Old Reagan will outdraw him, I'll tell you.
Oh, I think so. I'll tell you, those barks over there, I think they're stringing themselves right and left anyway.
They are, and that old Goombaji, whatever his name is, got about 200 miles.
Neemer this, Neemer that, you know. And I told him, I said, now there goes the baller. I said, the old moose is just about ready to flatten. He harps Neemer on the whole world, and I'll bet you $5 he's on welfare.
Boonters like Deacon, Sandy, and Chipmunk can talk about most anything in Boonling, since it has a vocabulary of nearly 1,300 words. It's one of just a few distinct American lingos. There's a hill talk in Tennessee, and something similar to Boonling is spoken in Philadelphia among blacks, with a vocabulary of around 5,000 words. Boonling, like these other lingos, is not a language, but a specialized vocabulary used within the context of American English. A nursery rhyme in Boont shows how it works.
The Eildon piked for the Chigwell Nook, for Gorms for the Ball Bell Jimmer. But the Nook was drung, and the Gorms were gone, and the Ball Bell Jimmer had Neemer. Do you know what nursery rhyme that is?
It's got to be Old Mother Hubbard. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. Very few people guess that.
Well, the rhythms are still there.
Yes, the rhythm is preserved. Now, if we would take that and translate that back in English, directly, look what happens. The old woman walked to the place the food is kept for food for her good rabbit dog. But the cupboard had been stolen, and the food was gone, and the good rabbit dog had no more.
C. Adams, professor of English at California State University at Chico, began to study Boonling in the early 1960s. He wrote a book called Boonling in American Lingo, which traces the lively history of the people and their jargon.
Boonville couldn't have been that unlike any isolated farm community at that time, so what was it that allowed the language to develop?
Well, I think there were probably two or three factors. One was the fact that they were relatively isolated, and I want to stress relatively. So these people had to depend on each other for entertainment. Another was that many of the people there were related to each other. So many of them knew each other before they came to the valley. Because they were somewhat isolated and close socially, they were thrown together a lot in the churches, in the grammar schools, at sheep shearing time, picking hops, playing on baseball teams. There seems to have been a high density, this is just my own opinion, I'm not a sociologist, but a high density of people who were very witty. They were fun-loving. They enjoyed playing games. It's tied to a particular time and place and set of characters. I think probably I said somewhere in my book on the subject that context is all, and that's really it. It's something that was just naturally grew out of a particular time and place and combination of personalities.
Old Pine Lamb Reddick, great high getter, ball booter. His daughter Mary had driven him down to Jack's Valley Store, and next door to it was a service station. So she harped on him, "I'll pull the mosh over there by the gas pump and we'll get some gas while I go in and get the groceries." She comes out, sets groceries in the car, gets in the car, reaches down, starts to turn the key, and Pine Lamb says, "Whoa, hold her." He says, "You got gas?" And she said, "Yes." Reached down for the key again, started, "Whoa, hold it. You got oil?" "Yeah." Reached down, started to turn the key, "Hold it again. You got water?" She said, "Yes." And he said, "Then touch her off." Can you see the extension of the drama? Was he not playing on the stage of life right then with his daughter, with no other audience at all? The booters play to their audience. One person constitutes the audience.
About the valley and its people that kept it alive for so long. You hear about kids inventing their own languages, but it never catches. Why did this catch?
The valley wasn't too easily entered or left, and people had to have something to do to amuse themselves, and so that was one of their pastimes, especially in the wintertime when they couldn't get out and carry on outside activities. Why, they sat around the stoves or in the saloon and harpooned.
I think the survival is tied in part with the stability of the population. I don't know that you could find any other place in the state of California where the population varied as little between 1880 and 1940 as in that particular valley. The isolation created within them a need for entertainment. It also led, I think, in part for their using the lingo to mark their own identity and also give them an opportunity to show some kind of hostility, as they often did toward people on the coast and inland. It was really delightful to be able to go over to Ukiah and put on and run down some of the locals without being understood.
Because of the relative isolation of Anderson Valley 100 years ago, people from larger valleys and from the coast tended to regard boonters as backwoodsy. As a defense, boonters came up with insulting nicknames for people from these surrounding towns. Ab chasers, fog eaters, high rollers, even the poleakers, natives of Philo just 6 miles down the valley, were rivals. The boonters' lingo grew in part from this feeling of being different from their neighbors, especially the city people. So from Boontling's early days, one of the great joys of the lingo was to be able to shark the brightlighter or put on the city person, both as a game and to protect the privacy of their language.
Brightlighters came to Boont once and when the old Gorman region was there next to the bucket, and they piked in and harped on the waitress there, "Is this where they harp Boont?" And the waitress says, "Yeah, this is the spot." And they says, "Well, is there anybody around that can harp? We'd sure like to hear somebody harp a little Boont. We've never heard it before." Just happened the waitress looked over across the street and Mitzi was sitting on the sidewalk there in front of Sam Region. And she says, "There is one of the best old Boonters right over there you ever heard," and said, "He's an old timer and he knows every word of it. You can go talk to him." Tickled to death, across the street they went and they walked up to Mitzi and they said, "We understand you harp Boont." And Mitzi said, "Yep." They said, "Could you speak a little bit of it so that we could hear it and kind of find out what it's like?" "Nope." Mitchie said, "No sense in that." He said, "You wouldn't know a damn bit more than I got through and you do now, so no use wasting my time," and he never told him a word.
But today, boonters are generally less reluctant to talk to brightlighters about their lingo. In the 60s, Professor Adams was able to gather an extensive collection of Boont terms and their origins. Many words came from the Boonters' Scotch-Irish background. Some imitate the sounds of what they describe.
A barrel is a deer gun. Key barrel, to fire a gun in the mountains. Key from the sound of it, and barrel comes the echo back from the mountains. A spat is a little 22. Ball is good. From the old ball brand shoes and boots, the red ball brand that were said to be the very best. Slib is from the words, it's just a little bit, all contracted into slib.
There are a lot of abbreviations. The American word sky pilot was common in the 19th century for a preacher, minister, and in Boonling it became Skype. Another one is what I call phonetic distortion, and they sometimes use that with abbreviation. They'll take something like hairy mouth, which means a dog, and call it harem. They distort the word so that someone who might otherwise be able to recognize it can't. One of the very rich sources was nicknames. One of my informants told me that everybody in Boont had a nickname. Even if Jesus Christ had come to Boont, they'd have given him a nickname. And I think that's probably true. I don't know what it would have been, but they'd have come up with something. It's so easy to use a nickname as a verb or a noun or to change it a little, make it into a modifier, and then the people who know that person immediately recognize the action or the object by association with the person.
A Jeffer is a large fire, coming about from old Jeff Vestal. He's the one that owned the Missouri House Hotel, and he used to go out on his lands, and they cut down brush, trees, pulled them together, and he built huge fires. And he come down the old Meese house, and right in a hot afternoon, built a roaring fire in the fireplace and run all the guests out of the lobby. You know, so a Jeffer, a fire.
There's a lot of words in the language that if used in the right conversation in the right sentence can tell almost a whole story.
Oh, yeah.
You bet. Just one or two words.
Yes.
Can tell the whole story. But there again, you almost have to know the history and the background, the language and the people, in order to appreciate the story that they're trying to get across.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is one of the beauties of Boontling. I don't know whether it's the thought of being able to speak something that nobody else can understand me or what, but when I was gone for the 10 years, I was in one area that was primarily Spanish nationality. And I had the feeling every time I went in a store and heard those people speaking Spanish that they was talking about me, and I couldn't understand them. So now I get a great thrill out of going someplace and harping Boont knowing that they can't understand me.
That's the object of Boontling is fun.
For the Brightlighter, the fun of hearing Boontling harped is in trying to decipher it. It's possible to if you're armed with a few basic definitions. Nonch is bad. A kimmy is a man. To horn is to drink. And fratty is wine. So now we're ready to listen to a conversation. Deacon's well is out of order, and this year's ganos, that's apples, aren't doing well.
Come on in, we'll harp a sleigh. Yeah, I see you're having quite a tidrick with your Deep Rudy mosh out here.
Yeah, the Rudy she shied in the Deep Rudy region, and we're going malignant.
Oh, that Kimmy that's down in there, he is white oak, and that is nunch.
Well, I'll tell you, Chipmunk, that pulling that bucket out ain't buckeye neither.
No, I noticed you get back there and you gave a big reef on that thing and almost lifted that kimmy right out of the bleakering region.
Yeah, right. Another thing that's pretty nonce this year is these ganos. The gano sale is nonce this year.
I hadn't heard nothing on that.
Well, I don't know, Chipmunk, what the reason is, but it seems like most of these kimmies with ganos around here, they pike to the bright lights with the ganos, and they either leave them set there or haul them back. And Kimmy the other day hauled them down in Anderson Creek and dumped them. She wouldn't sail. So.
Why, Kimmy can make fratty out of them.
Well, I think that's Ball Harpin's. Anderson Creek runs with fratty this year.
Anderson Creek runs with fratty, and just about the time she hits the Bob Moore hole, she'll be plenty for jeekus.
Oh, she's just ball for horning, and Kimmy can sirtle and horn all winter.
Wouldn't that be ball, just get down there and just have jeekus come rolling by while you're sirtling?
Let's see. Fermented apples have turned the creek into fratty. That's wine. And they're drinking it as they sirtle or fish.
Yeah, let the old dame pull a line in. That's Ball.
That's Ball Harper.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Well, from what I understand, these Kimmies hadn't been higged for 2 years now. And this is the third year. And if they don't get higgs now, why, I just don't know. Probably I'll have to shy the gannos and go to fratty altogether. What do you harp on the hymen of the Gold Dome over there? About an eighth Modocker?
Gotta be. Gotta be.
Oh, I think he's plenty Modocker.
He has got to be, and he harps with the posies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
the hymen of the Gold Dome, that's California Baller, Governor, you know, Jerry Brown. He's a hippie, you know, who talks to flowers.
Huge cruise, Hawaii or someplace like that.
Oh, he went clear to the Boca region with her.
And we're going to have to make a hilch of good old Price Babcock.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, it's been many good years time since I've seen that.
And I had some last year. All you got to do is just kind of slow down drinking it. It'll take care of itself. Yeah. Put
after they drink a hilch of the hard cider, they're going to go down to the... Yeah. No, I'd better leave this one to your imagination.
Right through Jacker's Gorge, about 20 paces.
At least. At least. never touch pickle.
Oh, never touch pickle. Never hit the main wire either.
In part because of the work of Professor Adams and other scholars, Boonters have been rescued from that false image of them as uneducated back hills people who speak a strange language because of their isolation and ignorance. So the hostility that once motivated sharking the outsiders is gone, but the fun remains. When a bright light Kimmy pikes into Boone in his mosh, in other words, when a city man travels to Booneville in his car, hardly a Boonter can resist that temptation.
That was Weefus, and I was... up in front of Sam's region, right in front of his mother's region, and this came in from the bright lights, piked along in a little motion, got out and come over and asked Weavis and I, he said, could you tell me where would be a good place to camp tonight? So Weavis and I looked at each other, and Weavis harped Grizzly River Flats, and I harped Yide, but the Jape was pretty nonch up there for bright light Kimmy. Oh, he harped Yide on that, and I harped maybe piking to the Redwoods toward the Briny. And Weepa said, oh, I just thought, he said, he ought to pike to Barney Flats. And I said, oh, that's plenty ball. I said, that's the ballest region there is for overnight. And I said, yeah, pike down to Barney Flats, that's a ball region. And I looked around, and here was this poor Kimmy standing about half dumbfounded with his hands down to his side and his eyes batting, looking at us, wondering what we had said. And finally, we both stood and looked at him, and he said, well, how far is it down to this place? And I said, oh, just a slib less than steam down there. Well, he says, how do I find it? And oh, I said, it's plenty easy to find. I said, just pike down past Plico, just a slib, and a huge sign there, Hart's Barney Flat, to the left. And I said, can't miss it. He stood there a second longer and nodded his head and kind of batted his eyes a little bit and finally turned real slow and started to walk across the street. And going across the street, he stopped twice and looked back at us. Finally, he got in his mosh, and he sat there in the mosh a minute or two and kind of trying to wonder what we'd said, and finally he drove off, and as he went down the road, I asked Weepus, I said, where do you suppose he's going to go?
We say things in Bootling that we wouldn't think of saying in English.
Knowing that a lot of people won't know what you're saying.
Well, yes, and then even when they do know it, why, they don't take offense at it like they would if it were spoken in English.
All of a sudden, around the corner came Dame Piking with a huge set of mauls, and I was a deacon of Hilge, and she's piking along, and she's got on some of the ballest trilbies you ever saw, about 4 inches.
Developed primarily among men to begin with. Because it was a private language, it was used to discuss taboo subjects, particularly sex and bodily functions, from a man's point of view.
It seems to be a language spoken among the men. I would say the majority of the women understand it, but they very few of them speak it.
Why do you think not many women do speak Bootling?
I don't know. I think quite a few more women speak Bootling than we know.
given the time now, we're talking about the Victorian period, there was a sense on the part of women that the language was somewhat risque, not to say dirty, and it was their role to avoid that sort of thing.
Would women speak it any differently than men?
Well, probably they wouldn't use many of the taboo words, because I don't.
Would you say that it's a sexist lingo?
I suppose it might be sexist in the sense that it reflects what was a social condition at the time it developed. I'm not defending that, but the men were the ones who were working with the animals and shearing the sheep and hunting together. So Boontling actually developed, in my view, mainly in a context where men were thrown together with men.
It's more or less man-oriented. More prominent words deal with livestock and livestock handling and ranch work. There's not so much about women's work in the lingo. What used to be considered women's work, I mean.
In the mid-1960s, a group of Boonters who were interested in preserving their lingo got together and formed the Boontlingers Club. They have occasional meetings to discuss Boontling and generally just to have a good time.
We get together and real slib of load esking and a lot of just bald old harping.
It's something that has brought a group of us together. We have a common interest, people of different ages. There are some young folks around Boonville that are in their 20s, and they harp with me, and we're more like, well, it just kind of bridges the generation gap.
Also in the 1960s, elementary school teacher Edna Sanders devised another way to keep Boontling alive.
I became interested in it when I was teaching school because I could see in it a way of teaching dictionary work and the reading skills by teaching Boontling.
So the reason for your teaching the language was not so much to keep it alive, but as an educational tool?
Well, no, I think to keep it alive, too, because at the time that I was teaching, we were supposed to teach the history of our area. And this worked right in with teaching the history, which I would want the children to learn.
But Boonter enthusiasm isn't enough to keep the lingo alive. People just aren't speaking it much anymore, and the lingo is dying. Professor Adams.
The First World War had a considerable impact. Many of the young men who were second-generation speakers were drafted or volunteered for military service. So there was quite an emigration. Possibly things would have returned in the late 30s to what they had been in the teens. But the Second World War started, and instead of people moving out, there was a tremendous influx. There were two or three big mills, and that just changed that social context. When you have a little lingo which is made up, which grew right out of a certain set of social conditions, it's colored indelibly by the people, the geography of the region, by the occupations, the flora and fauna they dealt with. And even though it's being maintained today as a kind of local interest, it's an artifact. It's an artifact of a particular time. In the early 60s, there was a revival of interest from a scholarly point of view and a historical point of view. Some commercial use has been made of it for the tourist trade in Boonville. So we're seeing what I would call an artificial revival.
You can learn Russian, words on a paper, but you learn Boontling, and you become a part of that community. Not only present-day community, but you feel what the people felt 100 years ago.
Every weekend, Cliff pikes to Boonville on his motorcycle to learn the lingo and laugh with the Boonters. In the past 15 years, media coverage of Boontling has brought people from all over to come hear it for themselves. Boonville has responded with a few tourist attractions. Large signs proclaiming Bucky Walter mark the few payphones along the main highway. The Horn of Zeus, or Cup of Coffee, is a cafe that entertains a lot of visitors with its menu.
You got a Teasel and Borp Slibs and Prati Burger.
That looks good. How about a Muldoon Dom?
Where is that? That's
down here, breast of chicken.
Uh-huh.
And a Borpos.
Uh-huh. We have.
I think maybe I'm going to have,
Some bald gorming with huge dom and warp slivs. Their lingo means a lot to the Boonters. To them, it's the ultimate in entertainment. It beats TV, doesn't it?
Oh, it beats TV any day.
We're going to pike right back with the wee slip and miss.
Right, okay.
And now let's see this one.
We're back. Now, we got about 3.5 minutes. How do new words make their way into this jargon? Suppose, for example, disco. Now, do you do something with that? A disco, that's a ball.
Bootling began as an exclusive and private form of entertainment before the days of radio and television. Now it has become television entertainment, and its personal humor has been enjoyed by a national audience. This transformation is a clear example of why the use of bootling has declined since it began 100 years ago. When bootling is lifted out of its element, when its surroundings are changed, it changes. It becomes not a living language, but a preserved piece of Americana.
With the local children not learning to speak it, and with the interest in it being mainly from outsiders, do you think that the language will die once the old-timers do?
Well, I think as any more than an intellectual curiosity, yes. Almost all of my primary informants of the work I did in the 1960s are now gone. The further you get away from the people whose names are embedded in the language, the less vitality it has, because so much of the vitality is right in the personalities of the people.
Does it make you sad at all that the language is dying?
I don't think it is dying. I think that was one of the reasons why I wanted to preserve it. And I think through my work in the school and our forming a club especially, it has grown so that people outside of the area are interested in it too.
A lot of Boonters talk about bootling as a game, but it's obviously more to them. It's a whole lot more to them. What do you think it is to them?
Well, I think it's a slice of the past. I've often wondered, as I hunted myself in the Bald Hills, when I'm standing in a sea of stumps, what it must have looked like when it was fully forested. It must have been really something. It's always easy to look back, you know, on the good old days. The crack shots, the time when the deer were really plentiful, and there were the huge baseball games in Boonville, the great 4th of July celebrations and so on. I think probably more than anything else, it's a way of getting away from some of the kind of harsh realities of modern times.
What other town in the United States has its own language? You see, it is something that is very important, even though our Chamber of Commerce does not recognize it. They say that's your thing, not ours, and they've lost $1 million in free publicity. Maybe that's what makes our valley so charming and keeps it from becoming all chopped up and tore up. There's nothing beats going to the city and coming back to the smell of redwood trees, pepperwood, hearing the quail, and seeing the rail fences. That brings you back home again, both nasally and visually.
Can't you think of a better word than nasally?
Yeah, you come back here and do a wee slib of sniffing on the pepperwoods and the Charlie Davises, and then you dig a slib around and you see the rookie two and the reel, and you harp plenty ball, this is my region, where's my nook?
This has been NPR Journal. This program was produced by your host, Jenna Allison. Funds are provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.